claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char, and let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
Well, it's fascinating to discover that a new expose from Covert Action magazine about Barack Obama has appeared, and I've just published it on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. It's really a pretty fascinating piece, and I want to share parts of it with you. If any want to go there now themselves, you can follow what I'm saying, and then we can discuss it during the question period. It's just me today, no special guest. The title gives you the idea, I think. A Company Family, The Untold History of Obama and the CIA. It appears his mother and his father, whose identity is somewhat ambiguous, but who may or may not have been Barack Obama Sr., had ties with intelligence agencies. I mean, that Obama appears to have been raised and groomed for the role he would assume as President of the United States. It begins mentioning how Obama signed a secret order authorizing the CIA and other agencies to support the rebels in Syria seeking to oust Bashar al-Assad, a nationalist who had allied with Iran and stood up to U.S. proxy Israel. I believe that's a theme we find here. By the way, anyone who's still lingering under the misapprehension that we're in Syria to bring democracy to Syria has missed the memo that Syria is already a democracy, that Bashar al-Assad is the democratically elected president of Syria. But he's a nationalist. He's somebody who wants to put the interests of Syria ahead of those of other countries, just as Donald Trump is a nationalist, wants to put the interest of America ahead of those of other countries. Fidel Castro was a nationalist, wants to put the interests of Cuba ahead of other countries. Salvador Allende was a nationalist, wants to put the interests of Chile ahead of those of other countries. The CIA takes a dim view of nationalists, has gone out of its way to wipe them off the map. Obama was right in their pitching. They emphasize here the very tight relationship Obama had with John Brennan. Now, Obama, who appears to have been raised in Indonesia, though born in Kenya, to be a Muslim. Brennan also appears to be a Muslim. That may be of a tie that bound them together. We know, of course, that Barack Obama, in that same year, 2012, created ISIS with Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and John Brennan, director of the CIA, as a terrorist army that would rape, loot, and pillage. I mean, slaughter people, behead them, we were told, in Syria to put pressure on the Bashir government. And, brutal. Where Michael Flynn, who was then at the head of the National Intelligence Agency, opposed it. The Defense Intelligence Agency opposed it. And because Michael Flynn, whom, of course, Donald Trump would select to be his national intelligence advisor, national security advisor, opposed it. John Brennan suggested to Barack Obama that he ought to fire Flynn, which Obama obligingly did. I'm very convinced that the reason why Flynn was pilloried for a perfectly innocuous phone call with a Russian ambassador that was totally, 100% conventional, normal, nothing wrong whatsoever with the phone call, was because they were seeking a way to discredit him, because Mike Flynn was nobody's fool. He was in a position to cut through the smoke and mirrors and let Donald Trump know what's really going on. That was indispensable, given Trump was coming into office, that they be able to manage the flow of information to Trump, especially in relation to foreign affairs, where Trump would be least strong, having such a lack of experience, very good in terms of domestic politics, labor relations, the economy, business matters, which was one of the key reasons he was so successful in reviving the American economy, making us oil independent, elevating wages for the lowest working wage earners, such that by December of 2019, 40% of Black likely voters were declaring that they were going to vote for Donald Trump. Well, the Democratic Party can't lose 40% of its most reliable voting bloc and expect to win any elections. I believe this may have been when they threw in with the idea of stealing the election. It may have occurred before, because after all, they had the election of 2016 rigged for Hillary. They just didn't have it rigged enough. The turnout for Trump, particularly in rural counties. And what's crucial is, it's very tough to rig votes in rural counties. Richard Charnin, who's an expert on voter fraud, has explained to me, if you're going to steal an election, you got to go where the votes are. And the votes are typically not in rural counties, but in cities, which is why we've had so many revelations about major cities and counties, and there's going to be much more for stealing the election of 2020. I mean, they went all out to make sure that Trump didn't defeat them again, even after they rigged it for Hillary. And of course, I mean, getting once they succeeded massively, but it was done in such an implausible fashion that nobody who is aware of the nominees and their history, that, for example, Joe Biden had run for president 3 times over 35 years and never won a single caucus or a single primary until, of course, South Carolina, when James Clyburn came out for him. Clyburn came out for him, and Google went to work, and Facebook and all that, manipulating the vote to support Biden. And mail-in balloting became the rule with, using the coronavirus pandemic as the cover or explanation. And where Kamala, you may or may not recall, was the very first Democrat to drop out. There were some 17 Democratic nominees, and she was the very first to drop out. Nobody likes Kamala Harris. And the idea that these guys could have wound up getting more votes than any other candidates in history is so manifestly absurd that, in my opinion, only a mental midget could buy into it. But it turns out there are an awful lot of Democrats who do buy into it. And I don't know if they're seeking to delude themselves, because Trump was overwhelmingly more popular. I'll never forget the images when, in the waning days, he came in on a helicopter in these hills in Pennsylvania, and there were just tens of thousands of people turning out to see Donald J. Trump. I mean, it was, you know, 9 p.m., 10 p.m., they were all there. It was so moving. Contrast the tens of thousands there on these hills in Pennsylvania awaiting Trump versus in Phoenix just days before the election. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris made a rare joint appearance, and guess what? Nobody, not one person came. I mean, there were a few reporters there, of course, but they were embarrassed to have to report what had happened. Well, getting Obama in appears to have been very important for promoting the military-industrial complex and other sordid affairs, where, as Covert Action reports, not only did Obama fund this operation in Syria to the tune of about $1 billion, and I'm sure, you know, I mean, ISIS was right in the center of it. The Obama administration further backed coups in Ukraine and Honduras, pivoted the U.S. military to Asia, ramped up arms sales to Saudi Arabia, and expanded military bases in Africa, helped suppress evidence about CIA torture, refused to pursue a criminal case against the CIA's money laundering bank, HSBC, eavesdropped on U.S. allies and U.S. Congressman Dennis Kucinich, whom I regarded, by the way, as the smartest member of Congress at the time, who opposed his administration's illegal invasion of Libya that devastated the country, stepped up surveillance and efforts to destroy WikiLeaks and its founder Julian Assange, and presided over the prosecution of a record number of whistleblowers under the Espionage Act of 1917. This is a guy we're supposed to regard as one of the great presidents of the United States, and I got to admit, I was myself fooled at the time. I voted for Obama not once, but twice. Moreover, here's more of the real history Covert Action is reviewing. Additionally, the Obama administration protected longtime CIA assets from prosecution, like Rwanda mass murderer Paul Kagame, waged war by proxy in Yemen through the United Arab Emirates, to which it sold nearly $27 billion worth of arms, provided weapons to drug cartels in Mexico under the Operation Fast and Furious, while ramping up the war on drugs through the Plan Merida, and oversaw establishment of a clandestine arms pipeline from Libya to Syria by Ambassador Chris Stevens as part of Operation Timber Sycamore. That's quite a sordid history. Chris Stevens, it would turn out, wasn't wholehearted about this transfer of weapons and actually was opposing it, so that Hillary arranged for the attack on Chris Stevens and his aides in Benghazi, about which we've heard so much, but seldom getting the real story behind it. Obama's record as president, they report, should not have been surprising given his family background. His mother, Ann Dunham, worked for U.S. government agencies and allied NGOs, non-government organizations, the Ford Foundation, Asia Foundation, Development Alternatives Incorporated, and the United States Agency for International Development in Indonesia in the 1960s and 1970s, as well as Ghana, Nepal, Bangladesh, Pakistan, India, and Thailand. and had training in the Russian language, which, with everything combined, made her a CIA recruiter's wet dream. The microfinancing project she worked on to help turn traditional craft industries into sustainable businesses were designed to tether third world masses to the mentality of finance capitalism, as Obama's unauthorized biographer would put it. Dunham's boss at USAID in Indonesia, Dr. Donald Gordon Jr., author of Credit for Small Farmers in Developing Countries for USAID 1976, was identified in Julius Meader's 1968 book, Who's Who in the CIA, as a CIA agent. Another boss, Peter Geithner, was featured Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner's father. Anne obtained her bachelor's and master's degree in anthropology at the University of Hawaii, writing a thesis that argued Indonesian villagers were dynamic and could produce greater wealth if they had access to market incentives and capital. She went to Indonesia in the mid-1960s. At the time, the CIA was supporting a military coup led by General Suharto against the left-wing regime of Sukarno. Over 2 million suspected members of the Indonesian Communist Party were rounded up and massacred in its aftermath, and thousands more were imprisoned, many for decades. Much of her anthropological and consulting fieldwork was carried out in East and Central Java, which provided a hotbed of support for the PKI, that's the Indonesian Communist Party, including among members of the Javanese Women's Association and Labor Federation. The CIA at this time was employing anthropologists and development workers as undercover agents to gather information on villagers' political affiliations, in which Anne, according to a thesis advisor, Alice Dewey, had taken an interest. After her arrival in Indonesia, Dunham taught English at the American Embassy in Jakarta, which also housed one of the largest CIA stations in Asia and had significant satellite stations in Surabaya in eastern Java and Medan on Sumatra. She also worked for the Indonesian American Friendship Institute in Jakarta, a suspected CIA front. One of her closest colleagues, Adi Sono, had been the leader of the Muslim students during the overthrow of Sukarno. While Anne's recruitment as a CIA agent has never been openly acknowledged, she was among the few U.S. government employees with the language skills and access to fulfill this role effectively. Development projects in the region were explicitly designed to pry villagers away from the Indonesian Communist Party orbit, and Anne's work would have contributed to this. In March 1965, Anne married an Indonesian Lieutenant Colonel, Lolo Sareto, whom she met at the University of Hawaii's East-West Center, a kinder, gentler version of the School of the Americas, according to one writer, to cover a training program in which Southeast Asians were brought to Hawaii and trained to go back to create agent nets, as U.S. Information Service Director Frank Skotin described it. Remember, the School of the Americas here in the U.S. has trained South and Central Americans to form death squads, perform assassinations. I mean, it's absolutely horrendous. So that's what they mean by saying it was a kinder, gentler version of the School of the Americas. The head of the East-West Center in 65 was Howard P. Jones, U.S. ambassador to Indonesia from 1958 to 1965. He was president in Jakarta as Suharto and his CIA-backed military officers planned the 1965 overthrow of Sukarno, who was seen, along with the Indonesian Communist Party, as an ally of China. Jones later defended the coup in the Washington Post, writing that Suharto was merely responding to a communist coup against Sukarno, led by Colonel Untung, which was actually set up by the CIA. A friend of Anne's told her biography that the marriage to Lolo was arranged, suggesting Anne may have acted as a female honeypot for the CIA, whose job was to recruit assets and help them obtain U.S. citizenship. Hailing from an aristocratic family which lost out in Sukarno's land reform, Serrato was recalled to active duty in July of 1965 before General Suharto's right-wing coup, and worked as an army geographer in Java and Papua New Guinea, where the Indonesian army brutally suppressed popular revolt. Satoru went on to become an executive at Mobil Oil and its liaison to Suharto, whose economic policy is done and praised. Now, there's a photo here of Anne with Lolo, and, of course, Barack Obama, who was at the time age 6. So he'd already been born. More family connections. Obama's grandfather, Stanley Armour Dunham, who helped to raise him, served in the 9th Air Force Division in World War II. He is pictured in military uniform with no insignia, suggesting an intelligence unit. That's very interesting. Another photo featured his daughter Anne with the insignia of an elite school in Lebanon on her shirt in the 1950s. Or Stanley may have worked with the CIA or another government agency. In the early 1960s, Stanley Dunham was part of a group photo taken with Barack Obama Sr. on his departure from the University of Hawaii. Obama Sr. had been a part of a State Department CIA exchange financed in part by the Joseph P. Kennedy Foundation that brought future African leaders to the U.S., who are being groomed to serve U.S. interests in the Cold War. The photos suggest Dunham was one of the coordinators of the exchange, indicating work for the State Department or CIA. According to her official biography, Dunham worked as a future salesman for the Standard Grunham Furniture Company, which led to frequent travel and family moves. Independent researchers, however, believe that job was a cover for his work as an intelligence agent who surveyed radical groups or military or Air Force production facilities, which is what brought him to Hawaii. Dunham's favorite bar in Honolulu, to which he brought young Barry, that would be Barry Satoru, a.k.a. Barack Obama, not coincidentally was owned by William J. Lederer, a known CIA agent who wrote the Cold War classic, The Ugly American. Obama's purported Kenyan-born father, Barack Obama Sr., had met his mother in 1960 when he was 23 and she was 18 in a Russian language class at the University of Hawaii. The leader of the opposition Kenyan African Democratic Union condemned the exchange Obama was part of for favoring certain tribes, the majority Kikuyu and minority Luo, over other tribes to support the Kenyan African National Union. The latter's leader, Tom Mboya, was a favorite of the CIA and opposed the Pan-Africanist currents on the continent. He was the one who selected Obama Sr. for the scholarship. Obama Sr. returned the favor by going back to Kenya to work for the Kenyan Finance and Transportation Ministries and an oil firm in Kenya before dying in a car crash in 1982. Mboya himself was assassinated in 1969. Far-fetched as it sounds, Obama Sr. may not have been Barack Obama's real father. Obama Sr. and Anne never lived together or had a real wedding, and Obama Sr. had no contact with his son, except for a short 2-week visit to Hawaii when Obama was 10, which may have been for the purpose of securing Obama's seat in the coveted Punahou Prep School. The photo of Stanley and Obama Sr. is suspicious because what father in his right mind would be pictured smiling with a man who impregnated his teenage daughter and then abandoned her? There is evidence to suggest that Obama's real father was Frank Marshall Davis, an African-American journalist, sexually libertine poet, political radical, and alleged target of Grandpa Durham's surveillance. Grandpa's friend, Keith Kagawa, told an interview that Ann had had an affair with Davis because she was angry that the family had to move to Hawaii away from her high school friends, all of whom were attending the University of Washington. Ann became pregnant, and to hide the truth, Dunham paid Obama Sr., whom she knew through the University of Hawaii exchange, to marry Ann, giving him the opportunity to extend his visa and attend Harvard. Barack eventually found the truth, writing in his first memoir, Dreams from My Father, that the visits to Frank's house always left me feeling vaguely uncomfortable as if I were witnessing some complicated, unspoken transaction between the two men, a transaction I couldn't understand. Obama paid tribute to his actual father in a 1981 poem published at Occidental College Literary Journal called Pop, which attributes him features that resemble Davis and references Pop's poetry written before his mother died. Barack Sr. was not a poet, and although Stanley dabbled in poetry, Barry called him Gramps, and his mother committed suicide before his 8th birthday. This is really fascinating stuff. I encourage everyone. There's other news we're going to cover, but I wanted to make you aware that there's what it looks like a very serious, bona fide expose about Barack Obama that you can find now at James Fetzer, my blog, jamesfetzer.org. So I encourage you to check it out. We're about to hit the break, of course, and I'll be talking about a lot of bizarre things going on right here in the United States where the unvaccinated are being treated as though they were pariahs and being isolated. Some really stunning stuff that is totally illegal and violative of the principles of the Constitution, democracy, not to mention all what's going on here with these vaccines in violation of the Nuremberg Code. So there's much more to address when we return after the break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
You want to bear in mind that the New World Order is intended to do away with nation states that have their own defined borders, their own laws, their own currency, all that, in favor of borderless entity, one world with a single unified currency and only laws imposed upon all from above. I mean, that's the basic model. So when Donald Trump became president because he was promoting an America First agenda, that resonated with Americans who care about their country and are a bit sick and tired of seeing America put last, which is continuing, of course, under the Biden-Harris administration in ways that are simply grotesque. If you naively assume that the president of the United States is supposed to be looking out for the welfare and promoting the interests of the American people, he is basically doing away with borders. That's why you have this massive influx. That's why you have an attack on the customs and immigration agents, why you won't even let them ride horses. They want hordes, I mean literally hordes, of illegal immigrants to come into the United States to change the demographics and thereby the politics. My understanding is most of them are being flown to swing states where they'll make a difference. Now, Investment Watch blog has just published this today. Listen to this. The immigration crisis is intended to change politics by terminating Republican opposition October 8, 2021. The Biden administration is deliberately trying to allow illegal aliens in, grant them residency and then voting rights before the November 2022 election. November 2022, that's the midterm election. Biden sent his proposal to Congress in January 2021. That's his first weeks in office, which he called the U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021, which includes the following. And bear in mind, Joe Biden isn't the author of any of this. Joe Biden even appears to be literally an actor. There's more and more coming out about it. There's a fairly stunning piece fake president. This is on Before It's News. Fake president, Joe Biden clone, clones, doubles, actors, transvestites, hiding in plain sight, holographic or CGI. There's a video here. And I believe if you check this out on Before It's News, you'll find it confirms what I've been reporting since the first debate, namely that this guy they're calling Joe Biden, this guy who was inaugurated, is not the senator from Delaware we've known for so very long. He has certain of his affectations, but it's not the same guy. James Woods was the first to notice that his eye color had changed. Now he had brown eyes. I noticed there was something wrong with the earlobes, but the shape of the skull was wrong. There were behavioral differences. The new guy had a single Windsor. Biden wore a double Windsor. That's the way you tie, a necktie, which I have not worn since 1969. But also, I picked up on behavioral differences when the real Joe was with Jill. They'd be hand in hand or arm in arm. She'd be simply beaming, and he'd have this shit-eating smile on his face. Typical Biden. But when she's with the new guy, they're not hand in hand. She's looking a little uneasy, as though they might be found out. He doesn't have a smile on his face. And moreover, my suspicions were confirmed by a pharmacist who's used to verifying signatures for prescriptions to make sure they're not being fraudulently obtained. And what the pharmacist noticed is that the signatures of the two men are completely different. So Biden, who was inaugurated, has one signature, very different from the old Joe. I'm telling you, these are not even the same guy. So the amount of fraud going on here is beyond belief. In any case, here are the elements included in the U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021. Create an earned roadmap for citizenship for undocumented individuals. The bill allows undocumented individuals to apply for temporary legal status with the ability to apply for green cards after 5 years if they pass criminal and national security background checks and pay their taxes. Keep families together. Embrace diversity. The bill includes the No Ban Act that prohibits discrimination based on religion and limits presidential authority to issue future bans. Promote immigrant and refugee integration and citizenship. Grow our economy. Thrown in for good measure. Protect workers from exploitation and improve the employment verification process. It has been argued that Biden intends to grant 11 million illegal alien citizenship to tip the balance of power to the Democrats. Some fear it may be as many as 20 million. The Democrats hope this will end the Republican Party. I have told the story of how I, that's the author of this article, Martin Armstrong by name, was negotiating for Hong Kong to try to buy land in Australia. Here he's giving a parallel case. I met with former Prime Minister Paul Keating, who was Secretary of Treasury at the time. After much frustration at not being able to get a deal, I asked if this were a racist issue. He replied, no. If you let the people from Hong Kong in, they would vote conservative and change the balance of political power when he was Labor. I have firsthand knowledge of how they look at immigration solely in terms of the political mix. This is all about wiping out Republicans and creating a welfare-dependent society that gives them authority to oppress those who actually produce. And let me just emphasize again, this is all part and parcel of the one world, the new world order with no borders, no nation states. Everyone is on the dole after they eradicate, like 9/10 of the world's population. Biden is pushing Congress to do this as soon as possible. Meanwhile, the Department of Homeland Security has already ordered authorities to prioritize illegal immigrants for deportation who pose a threat to national security, public safety, and border security, claiming the government does not have the resources to apprehend every person who's entered the U.S. unlawfully. Thus, only those deemed to be a threat to national security will be deported. This is an open invitation for all of South America to come to the U.S. and get guaranteed basic income. Skills will no longer be required. Reports are that hundreds of thousands are now headed to the border. Europeans are not welcome, but anyone without skills is. I think this has got it exactly right. I've mentioned before that Mexico has a rational immigration policy where we do not. In Mexico, in order to immigrate, you have to satisfy two conditions. Number one, you have to be able to show you have something to contribute to the good of Mexico. That would be like a skill or a profession if you're a dentist or an embalmer. Then you have a skill you can contribute to the good of Mexico and thereby might warrant legal immigration. Second, you must be able to demonstrate you have the financial resources to support yourself and any family members coming with you. You must be able to support yourself. Now, notice what a sane, rational policy that is for Mexico to adopt if the United States were only to adopt those same two principles alone. We'd be overwhelmingly better off than we are today, particularly with the Biden administration is actually promoting. I mean, this is why this Jen Psaki won't really talk about it when they raise issues about the border, why Kamala never goes to the border. They don't want to do anything about the border. As far as they're concerned, the border is working just fine. The more migrants they bring in, they believe the more Democrat voters are going to get. That's really the politics of the border. Wow. Meanwhile, there have been some setbacks. Biden's been dealt a major blow as SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, orders a lower court to reconsider the border wall. The U.S. Supreme Court Monday handed the Biden administration a stunning defeat with regard to construction on former President Trump's border wall, which currently sits incomplete as illegal immigrants continue to flood across the open border. The country's high court ordered lower courts to vacate previous rulings about the wall, citing changed circumstances in the case. Environmental activists, judges, Democrats in Congress, and private law organizations such as the American Civil Liberties Union have, of course, opposed the wall since before concrete was even poured. The Trump administration in 2019 declared a national emergency at the border, which was 100% appropriate. The White House and DOD then diverted $3.6 billion in military funds to undertake the initiation of its construction. Trump accomplished bypassing Congress by invoking his authority under the National Emergency Act. Soon thereafter, lawsuits were being filed in opposition. The Sierra Club, for example, a left-wing environmental organization that, to the best of my knowledge, has for the most part done good work with regard to national parks and the like, was among many who filed lawsuits seeking an injunction to have it stopped. The ACLU also filed suit and won when the District Court for the Northern District of California ruled the Trump White House could not use Pentagon funds to secure the border. Last October, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, historically known for siding in favor of far-left causes, ordered wall construction to halt while agreeing with the District Court on appeal. The Ninth Circuit agreed with the lower court ruling to stop the project. This appeal presents a question of whether the Emergency Military Construction Authority presented by 10 U.S. Code 2808 authorized 11 border wall construction projects on the southern border of the United States. We conclude that it did not. We also consider whether the district court properly granted the organizational plaintiffs a permanent injunction and whether the district court improperly denied the state plaintiff's request for a separate permanent injunction. Now, However, the Supreme Court is involved, and it has vacated the district court's ruling and ordered the appellate court to take another look at the case. The judgment of the district court is vacated. The case is remanded to the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit with instructions to direct the circuit court to vacate its judgments. The district court should consider what further proceedings are necessary and appropriate in light of the changed circumstances in this case. On his very first day in office, mind you, President Biden ordered construction on the wall to be halted through an executive order. Like every nation, the United States has a right and a duty to secure its borders and protect its people against threats, he said in a proclamation. But building a massive wall that spans the entire southern border is not a serious policy solution. He went on to call it a waste of money, diverting attention from genuine threats to our homeland security. So that's, as we all know, total bullshit. It was actually extremely successful. The number of illegals passing through our southern border with the rigorous enforcement through the Trump administration wound down to a mere trickle. And of course, everyone knows now that they're not being tested, you know, for coronavirus. They're not being required to take a jab. It's just absurd. If the pandemic were real, and of course I've given you ample reason to believe it is not, then they ought to, be taking measures. And if the facts were good, then everyone in government ought to be getting vaccinated. But we know, in fact, they have made exemptions for themselves. My opinion is that the Congress should not be allowed to pass any law whose provisions do not apply alike to the government itself, to the members of Congress. Because the way it is, they've created a two classes of residents of the United States, those who are affiliated with the government, who are exempt from all of the requirements the government is imposing upon the rest of the public. This is outrageous. This is wrong morally, politically, constitutionally. It's all wrong. I mean, after all, hypothetically, suppose the pandemic were real. Suppose the threats to life and health from the pandemic were bona fide. And believe me, the pattern of death simply mimics, it tracks the normal life expectancy, the normal death rate. There's nothing novel about it. I've reported on this many places, many times, reinforced by a lot of others, including a woman at Johns Hopkins, whose study slipped through the cracks to reveal there'd been no increase in death in any of the age groups from previous years, where there'd been no increase in sale of oxygen tanks or IV stands and drips, which would be a necessity if there were vast numbers of coronavirus patients flooding the hospitals, as we're told on a daily basis. I mean, the amount of lying going into this boggles the mind. And where even the insurance industry provides confirmation, because there's been no change in the rates for life insurance policies, which of necessity would take place, assuming, of course, the industry doesn't intend to bankrupt itself, were there now a new factor affecting life expectancy in the United States? What they are doing by not changing their rates is confirming there's been no change in the rate of death. What's happening, however, now is that those who are vaccinated are suffering serious maladies. And of course, that's the reason the government wants to exempt itself. It understands what's going on here. This is part of the Great Reset genocidal globalist depopulation program, where if you look at the Georgia Guidestones, rumored to have been put up by Ted Turner, who seems to me to have, if this is the case, completely lost his way, states the desired population for planet Earth is 500 million. That's one half of a billion, 500 million for the entire Earth, where we have about 8 billion today. So you subtract 500 million from 8 billion, and you're talking about, to get to the desired 500 million, exterminating a massive genocide of 7.5 billion people. I mean, think about it. Think about it. And we have the Deagle projections right here that the United States is going to be undergo a huge difference in population between 330 million in 2020 and now 65 million in 2025. A drop of 265 million. That's going to include a lot of your friends, your relatives, and your neighbors. Bear in mind. So we have the United States actually suggesting if there wasn't a national emergency on the border back in January, there most certainly is now. The Supreme Court did not elaborate on what changed circumstances directed it to order lower courts to revisit previous rulings about the border. Perhaps the fact the country's border with Mexico has become a national security issue, a humanitarian crisis, and an international embarrassment played a role. Well, that's good for the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, this Kamala Harris, who's pretty much as unpopular as Joe Biden, I mean, no one ever took seriously this Kamala Harris. She's now in hot water after her latest colossal blunder. And when you understand this is really a Rothschild enterprise, when you appreciate that our mainstream media is dominated by Israelis, where I've endlessly pointed out that I have a panel of 100 executives from CNN, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. Another panel of 100 executives from NBC, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. Another panel from the New York Times, every one of whom is a U.S.-Israeli citizen. You'll see why Kamala's in hot water. Get this. Kamala was supposed to be an asset for the Biden regime. Her tenure, however, has been a complete disaster as vice president. She's in hot water now after her latest colossal blunder. She was positioned to be the Democrats' next presidential candidate after being placed as vice president. Instead, her run as vice president has been a complete dumpster fire. She was put in charge of solving the border crisis, but waited 100 days to actually show up there. Recently, she pulled back from the public eye to rebrand her image with the help of Hillary Clinton allies. Supposedly, new and improved Kamala continued her pattern of epic bloopers, however. She made a surprise appearance at an event at George Mason University with students to encourage voter registration. During questions from students, one of them observed that Israel was engaged in ethnic genocide against the Palestinians. Harris nodded along in agreement and dropped what the authors of this regard as a ridiculous statement in response. She said, "Your voice, your perspective, your experience, your truth cannot be suppressed and it must be heard." A backlash has begun to grow because, of course, this implied that the Israelis are committing genocide against the Palestinians, which is, in fact, a well-documented historical record. There's no question about it. They're shutting off Palestinians from wells. They're poisoning their crops. They're ripping out their olive orchards. They're shooting Palestinian kids for sport. This is well known. As I've observed before, the final solution to the Palestinian problem for the Israelis is to load all the Palestinians aboard a ship, float it out to sea, and sink it. No doubt about it. So actually, what Kamala said here was not inappropriate. It's just that it suggests that Israel has done something wrong. And of course, we know Israel can do no wrong. Bear in mind, Israel basically runs the United States Congress. I mean, it's pathetic. It was such a realization for me to come to grips with the fact that AIPAC, the American Israeli, they call it Public Affairs Committee, but it's a lobby, it's a political action committee, dominates Congress so completely that, as Cynthia McKinney revealed a decade or more ago, new members of Congress are asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States, a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States. And anyone who declines to do so finds their financial support dries up. Next time around, they're confronted with a well-financed alternative candidate, or even if there's been a census intervening, that the district has been redrawn and they no longer have a seat. Cynthia, for example, was able to transcend and serve some six terms in the House of Representatives. But even as notable a figure as Dennis Kucinich had his district redrawn and was not. So that a colleague of mine asked me, this is years and years ago, did I know how many members of the then current Congress had refused to sign the pledge? And I had to admit, I did not know. And he held up one finger of one hand. One member of the United States Congress had declined to sign the pledge. So when you have a Donald Trump come along who's promoting America first, notice that contradicts the pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States. When he strengthens the U.S. economy, when he makes it more vibrant, when he cuts down on the border, and because there's not cheaper labor to undercut the lowest wage earners in the country, many of whom are in agribusiness, picking crops, they saw their wages rise at the fastest rate, which is what led to that Rasmussen poll that 40% of black likely voters were planning to vote for Trump in 2020. So the Democrats had to go in high gear. Notice how absurd it would be to have to bring in millions of immigrants if the Democrats had actually won the 2020 election by, you know, Biden getting more votes than anyone else in American history. Their own actions belie their claims. It's simply outrageous what's going on here. And I'm terribly worried that if something doesn't happen soon, the United States is going to be so destroyed that we're not going to recognize our own country if we survive the vax. I'll be right back.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either," available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, we have a pretty odd situation with Tony the Rat, who's making scary declarations to Canadians. It's time to give up your individual right of making your own decision. Listen to that. This is Anthony Tony the Rat Fauci. He gave a virtual lecture entitled COVID-19 Lessons Learned and Remaining Challenges to Canadians at McGill University, in which he made a startling declaration. Fauci boldly told Canadians who oppose vaccine mandates that they have, quote, no right to make their own decision about what goes into their body. During the presentation, which outlined how the world continues to battle with the COVID pandemic, he said, quote, there comes a time when you have to give up what you consider your individual right of making your own decision. I mean, think about this. How incredible is this? Fauci became his message, those freedom-minded Canadians who believe the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and Bill of Rights are being violated by COVID-19 vaccine mandates and passports, by saying, quote, I think what people have to appreciate is that, indeed, you do have personal liberties for yourself and you should be in control of them. But, he added, you are a member of society, and as a member of society, reaping all the benefits of being a member of society, you have a responsibility to society. And I think each of us, particularly in the context of a pandemic that's killing millions of people, you have got to look at it and say there comes a time when you have to give up what you consider your individual right of making your own decision. This is, by the way, the mindset of the totalitarians. Hegel was advancing this kind of view. It's inherent in communism and most versions of socialism that the interests of the group outweigh those of the individual. That's the problem, of course, with a pure democracy where you have mob rule, which does not take into account individual rights. That's the genius of our Constitution and Bill of Rights, is that we have majority rule, but with respect for minority rights. If you take away the minority rights, then you have nothing but the mentality the politics of the mob, because if the mob surges and wants to lynch a prison inmate because they think he's done something wrong, regardless of whether he has in fact, in the absence of any due process or a trial to which he would be properly entitled, just take him out and string him up, then that's a response to society. Fauci is no more warranted in what he's declaring here than would be a mob, a lynch mob on the move. I mean, this is very, very bad. It shows us Fauci is a totalitarian at heart. Remember, the Nuremberg Code provides ethical guidelines. Tony the Rat has to know the Nuremberg Code. Every physician knows the Nuremberg Code, not to mention the Hippocratic Oath. Listen to this. Voluntary consent is essential. That means you have to be informed of all the benefits, but also all the risks associated, which is virtually impossible now, though we're learning more and more, and it's horrifying about the risks associated because they appear to be long-term. And as long as these vaccines are only under emergency use, they're not required to identify the contents of the vaccines. Think of the obscenity that represents all by itself. You don't even know the contents of the vaccine with which you're being injected, something you put in your body, and you're not even allowed to know what it is. And it turns out to have all kinds of gross stuff. I mean, I can't begin to tell you. I'm doing these reports, you know, on need to know every day, doing an update on the news. And some of those are just horrifying because they're looking at the contents of these vaccines under microscope. There's all kinds of weird stuff, all kinds of filaments. We got Stu Peters, by the way, who had a wonderful guest on, Dr. Carrie Maggia, who was talking about what she saw under the microscope. And it includes all these creatures with filaments, some of which appear to be alive, one of which actually sat up. I'm looking at an image here. It looks like it might be a bug, like a tick. That's actually in the microscopic version of which is in the vax. This is from looking at a Pfizer, where they had a Pfizer approved in Europe, a version of Pfizer, not available here, because if it were available here, then the emergency use authorization would no longer be valid, because it's only valid as long as there's no other approved alternative. All these filamental things. Carrie Maggia actually observed how this thing, it looks sort of like a spider. I'd compare it to a miniature tarantula. It looks on that order. Was actually lifting itself up off of the glass slide when she was examining it, and she had the weird feeling that it was aware it was under observation. Creepy stuff. No one should want to put this in their body. This is very, very serious. And of course, we know even the World Health Organization has documented adverse reactions from around the world. Get this. Blood and lymphatic system disorders, 88,000 plus. Cardiac disorders, 107,000 plus. Congenital, familial, and genetic, 1,000 plus. Ear and labyrinth disorder, 72,000 plus. Endocrine disorder, nearly 3,000. Eye disorders, over 80,000. Gastrointestinal, over 450,000. General disorders, 1,333,000 plus. Habilitatory disorders, over 4,000. Immune disorders, over 30,000. Infestations, 146,000 plus. Injury, poisoning, 106,000 plus. Investigations, nearly 300,000. Metabolic, nutritional, 50,000. Musculoskeletal and connective disorders, nearly 644,000. Neoplasm, benign, malignant, unspecific, over 3,000. Nervous system disorders, nearly 1,000,000. Pregnancy disorders, nearly 5,000. Product issues, nearly 4. Psychiatric, over 100,000. Renal urinary, over 17,000. Reproductive, over 84,000. Respiratory, over 231,000. Skin and subcutaneous, 301,000. Social circumstances, 15,000 plus. surgical and medical procedures, over 19,000, nearly 20 vascular, nearly 120,000. Now, what's interesting about this study is it shows that actually, preponderantly, those who are suffering these disorders are women. They're female. In other words, of the over 2 million disorders documented on the WHO website, 1.5 million are with women and only about 650,000 for men. So that's a proportion of nearly 70% female and about 30% male, which suggests to me it's because they're going after reproduction, that a lot of this is targeted at women and making them sterile, infertile, so they cannot reproduce. I mean, that's, after all, what depopulation is all about. But this study was actually stunned, because in 2021, there were 2,181,543 adverse reactions reported. 2,181,543. Compare that to 2020. 2020, 2,254. Compare 2 million versus 2,000, over 2 million versus 2,000. And in 2019, only 82. In 2018, only 29. In 2017, only 2. 2016, 1. 2014, 1. So everyone in the world, everyone in medicine knows that there's a calamity taking place here through these vaccines. And when you look at the Nuremberg guidelines, it says no experiments. And remember, these are still experimental, so these are experiments. Should be conducted if it's believed to cause death or disability. The risk should never exceed the benefits. Experiment should be conducted avoiding physical, mental suffering, and injury. Well, you got over 2 million damaged human beings because these are running amok, running completely amok. And when you look at the ghastly contents here, and this Stu Peters, by the way, Stu Peters, I want to tell you, this is a brilliant guy. I put him up there with Tucker. I think Stu Peters is running neck and neck with Tucker Carlson for doing the best job of exposing. Tucker, every now and then, still shows that he really is naive about some of the major events of our time. He was talking as though 19 Islamic terrorists have been responsible for 9/11. I mean, you know, Tucker is weak on conspiracies, but he's good on an awful lot of other stuff. He's been doing absolutely sensational in exposing the Democratic Party for its hypocrisy and the gross measures taken to destroy the country. So here's more in case you miss this memo. CDC allows hospitals to classify dead vax people as unvaccinated. The CDC has devised a set of rules pertaining to the classification of infectious disease and death that simultaneously inflate the number of COVID cases in the unvaccinated and allow hospitals to classify dead vaccinated people as unvaccinated deaths. Hospitals and laboratories are required to follow these rules and report official COVID-19 data based upon them. It appears that these rules were designed to conceal the number of COVID deaths in the vaccinated category and to conceal the number of deaths caused by the COVID-19 vaccines themselves. This medical fraud and morbid treachery allows the CDC to continue on with a false narrative that the nation is suffering from a pandemic of the unvaccinated. People who die from the vaccine are used as props to falsely advertise the need for more of these deadly vaccines. And that's what we're getting from Tony the Rat. Tony the Rat. How disgusting. You're a member of society. As a member of society, reaping the benefits of being a member of society, you have a responsibility to society, and I think of us, particularly in the context of a pandemic that's killing millions of people. Let me tell you, it's not the pandemic that's killing millions of people. It's the vaccines. So Tony the Rat is promoting death and devastation. This is a disgusting individual. I don't even regard him as a human being. He's so inhumane. get this, Rebel News reports, Fauci began his message to freedom-minded Canadians that I think what people have to appreciate is that indeed that you do have personal liberties for yourself. You should be in control of them. That's right. My body, my choice. No one should be subjected to an experimental medical procedure without their permission. Tony the Rat is embracing mandates and forced vaccinations thereby. Get this. Back in 2019, this just shows this hypocrite and stooge who I have no doubt is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the Rothschilds. Tony Fauci in 2019. Masks are a paranoid tool. People shouldn't be walking around with masks. During a 2019 sit-down interview on the David Rubenstein show, Dr. Anthony Fauci mocked wearing a mask to prevent infectious diseases as a paranoid tool, laughing at anyone who decides to do that. Rubenstein and Fauci discussed infectious disease and vaccines and what people can do to avoid getting sick. And of course, I have 8, 10, maybe a dozen articles about masks, all kinds of stuff about vaccines, all the hazards represented thereby on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. Meanwhile, Fauci, just in the last week or so, has angrily asserted he'll never resign over his COVID failures, even if he does more harm than good. No, absolutely, unequivocally no, he stated, if he'd ever resign because he's doing more harm than good. Absolutely not. He's now also saying everyone needs to be vaccinated to avoid a dark winter. What does he mean? Well, Fauci knows that these vaccines wipe out your immune system. So that means as winter approaches, as a flu season comes upon us, there's going to be a stunning increase in individuals who are incapable of dealing with a flu that normally would have survived, that are going to die because they've had the shot. They're going to die because they've had the shot. So Fauci is getting ahead of the curve by telling us everyone needs to be vaxxed to avoid a dark winter when he knows better. He knows bloody well this is going to be catastrophic. Meanwhile, get this. The forms of social pressure applied to get the vax and put yourself in harm's way to become another statistic include hospital system says it will deny transplant to the unvaccinated in almost all situations. A Colorado-based health system says it's denying organ transplants to parents not vaccinated against the coronavirus in almost all situations, citing studies showing these patients are much more likely to die if they get COVID-19. But the facts of the matter are the opposite. The facts of the matter are the opposite. Israel's a prime example. They're getting a staggering number of deaths and more COVID infections, even though they're like 85% vaccinated as a nation. They're a pilot study. This policy illustrates the growing cost of being unvaccinated wades into deeply controversial territory. The use of immunization status to decide who gets limited medical care. Yes, this is a discrimination under the law, which is unconstitutional. You're not allowed to discriminate under the law on the basis of vaccine status. Where the hell did that come from? Well, we know damn well. The mere idea of prioritizing the vaccinated for rationed health resources had drawn intense backlash as overwhelmingly unvaccinated COVID-19 patients push hospitals to adopt crisis standards of care in which health systems can prioritize patients for scarce resources based largely on their likelihood of survival. UC's health rules for transplant entered the spotlight Tuesday when Colorado State Representative Tim Geithner said it denied kidney transplant to a Colorado Springs woman because she was not vaccinated against the coronavirus, calling the decision disgusting and discriminatory. Geithner shared a letter that he said the patient received last week from UC Health Transplant Center at the University of Colorado's Anschlatt Medical Campus. The letter said the woman would be inactivated on a kidney transplant waiting list and had 30 days to start a coronavirus vaccination. If she refused to be vaccinated, she would be removed. UC Health declined to discuss particular patients because of federal privacy laws. The Washington Post could not independently verify the woman's story, but the health system confirmed Tuesday that nearly all of its transplant recipients and organ donors must get vaccinated against the coronavirus. A woman spokesman, Dan Weaver, said that other transplant centers have similar policies or are transitioning to them throughout the United States. Conditions on organ transplants are not new. Transplant centers may require patients to get other vaccinations, to stop smoking, to avoid alcohol, or demonstrate otherwise. They will take crucial medications to ensure they do well post-surgery and don't reject the organs. Meanwhile, we have another development. New York hospitals refuse to release newborn babies to unvaxxed parents. Get this. In what appears to many people to be kidnapping and extortion, New York University Langone Hospital and other hospitals in New York and on Long Island are refusing to release newborn babies to parents who are unvaccinated. This is disgusting. Completely disgusting. Their COVID quackery knows no shame and no limits. The FBI used to investigate serious crimes like kidnapping. This is completely outrageous. And, you know, that this is happening in the United States, I'm telling you, we're in the midst of a medical tyranny. This is completely unprecedented. This is completely monstrous. I'm utterly convinced it would not be taking place were it not the case that the Rothschilds want to take over the entirety of planet Earth. Here's another about a baby whose mother had been vaxxed. Another who got vaxxed postpartum. So the baby whose mother got vaxxed before birth has this weird rash and all kinds of outbreaks all over its body. The baby whose mother was vaccinated after it was born and therefore only acquired the elements of the vaccine through breast milk has a much milder form. But how can a hospital in good conscience be making moves like this to require parents to get vaxxed when the death rate among the vaxxed is overwhelmingly higher than among the unvaccinated? And the only reason it doesn't appear to be that way is because the CDC is deliberately manipulating its statistics. This is grotesque. Let me affirm I want to open the lines to callers after the break. 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. The situation is so dire. I mean, we have a tyrannical government. Now, there's never been this kind of medical tyranny before in the history of the nation, but we've got it now. We've got it now. I mean, just absolutely stunning. Stunning stuff. Jim Stone has been reporting on the full criminalization of everything. Let me mention of some of what he has been reporting. And as I say, after the break, I'll take your calls, 540-352-4452. It's beginning to become apparent that the only way to get into a government position is to be a criminal who's part of the club. Consider all our politicians, even Rand Paul, are pushing a shot that is clearly destroying the population and no one is being held accountable. In Australia, Gladys Berejiklian pushed the harshest forced vaccinations and lockdowns in the world after receiving bribes worth millions, at the same time not prosecuted for receiving past big pharma bribes. As it turns out, the harsh measures in Australia were not at all about health and instead had 100% to do with corruption and payoffs. Here is what will happen. She will resign her post, and that will be punishment enough. There will be no subsequent prosecution. She was allowed to be ousted because for some reason she wasn't doing a good enough job. Even worse and more draconian leadership will follow. That is just the way it is when criminals have taken every post from top to bottom. For some reason, they had to let her go. She will not be punished. The replacement will be worse. We are witnessing the replacement of criminals who are not doing well enough with better criminals who will get the job done. There will be no investigation, no jailing, no nothing. The system has gone too banana republic for any of that to happen. All the while, behind the scene, the people who paid her off to do what she did simply retract into darkness, only to return with a new tentacle attached to the next criminal mask who would do their bidding. Big Pharma is run by these criminals who openly sought to destroy the population via the shots. And when cures were offered for what the shots were supposed to treat, those cures were blocked. And now, after too much public outrage, they are releasing patented and very expensive pills that are synthetic copies of the cure. After all, hope was lost in stopping the cure. We're talking here about ivermectin in particular, where Merck seems to be putting out a pill at exorbitant cost that contains ivermectin. Because the government consists of criminals who are presented and supported by criminals, no one will prosecute these companies owned by the same behind-the-scene criminals. No one will question the shot. Since the shot itself is a primary objective, it continues to be pushed, even while criminals present the alternative. The criminals in the media, who were complicit in all the recent scams from vote rigging to climate to COVID, are to be received $50,000 a year tax credit each, all the reporters, out of anything but an infrastructure bill for their compliance with all the con jobs and refusing to report corruption where found. In other words, the Democrats have built this in into their massive $3.5 trillion bill, which has a lot of other horrible stuff from everything I'm told. So we'll be right back and take your calls after this break.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Bruce from Texas is once again Johnny on the spot. Bruce, go ahead and share your thoughts.
Hey, Jim. How am I coming through today? Do you hear me
fine.
Okay?
Fine.
All right. That's great. Yeah, you closed up pretty well there. It seems like every institution in Western society has been subverted and weaponized. And that's a very important point, you know. But it's been going on there. You also mentioned Barack Obama. I want to commend you on referencing Frank Marshall Davis in the book put out by, what's his name? That author, The Dreams of My Real Father.
Yes.
Anyway, you know the book I'm talking about? There's also a film that goes with it.
Well, I know of it. I haven't read it.
Joel Gilbert. Yeah, he put that out, and it's undeniable. You put the two pictures of Barack Obama and Frank Marshall Davis together, and I mean the resemblance is striking. You know, they have the same facial structure, same jaw, the same lips, the same forehead. I mean, it's father and son. You know, but the conservative outlets from the maybe about 5 years ago, going on back, they all harped on the secret Muslim and Kenyan and all this. I think that was a misdirection ploy. So, yeah, we need to be careful about that stuff because they can get embedded. Even Trump, who, you know, I think Trump has fed a lot of information and he doesn't do further research to confirm or deny it. And he went on with the birth certificate was fake, but then he went on with the Kenyan thing. And, do you remember when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, when they were running in 2008, that they secretly met at the Bilderberg Group meeting in Chantilly, Virginia?
Yeah.
And they had Barack Obama's reporters on his press plane. They're on the tarmac there in Washington, and then they just took off. And there's the words Obama, like, oh, well, don't worry about it. You know, we can't wait any longer, you know. And then Hillary, later on, she's at a book signing or a campaign event, and somebody asked her about it. Weren't you at the Bilderberg meeting with Barack Obama? She said, no, I don't remember that. You know, clearly lying, you know. And so it shows that you know, these presidents are groomed and picked. And, you know, you go back to Ron Paul and then Sanders, you know, that these people should have been at least had the chance on the presidential ticket, but they were denied that because that's how corrupt our system is. And one more thing, you're going to have Ollie Domagard on next week?
I don't know if Ole will be next week. We've got a, he's in Bali. So it turns out that the time frame is such, it would have been very awkward. It would have been like midnight his time. I initially thought Ole would be up for it, but I was mistaken. So that I'd missed a couple of messages from his secretary saying that this wasn't going to work. So we're apparently going to have to pre-record, Bruce. So I don't know if Ole is going to be around Monday or not, you know, this coming week. Right. Probably not, but we've got, we get pretty good guests for that, for the event. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was just curious, since he's in Bali, one of the events of the past few years that also ties into 9/11 in my mind is the Bali bombing. A lot of people don't even know that occurred. And there was a huge bombing there. It took out a nightclub, killed a lot of people. And there was an Australian conspiracy researcher. His name is Joe Vials. He wrote some pretty interesting material on that, just speculating there was a micro nuke planted in the sewer there in front of the nightclub that, that took out that entire block.
Oh, I know. When I read the description in the New York Times, it was obvious to me it was a nuke. They used a mini nuke there. I don't have any doubt about it. It was a mini nuke.
Yeah, and isn't it curious how we that the Israeli lobby keeps harping on about Iran might produce a nuke, and here the Israelis have been nuking us in other countries for years, secretly, you know, undercover. And the, when you dig into it, you start to see that, yeah, that's, that is the case, you know. And, but, you know, such is the case with the general public. It's so snowblinded by the media and the layers of deception. They'll never see it. But I just wanted to see if Ollie was coming on next week or not. But I'll listen nonetheless. You do have a good show. And
I can't hang on. Sure, Bruce.
Yeah.
Glad you called. I appreciate you taking the call. Thanks.
Okay.
Sure. I'm glad you called in.
Bye.
Anyone else would like to call in? The number is, as the number is virtually every show, 540-352-4452. Anyone who'd like to call in, Mitchell, you're welcome to join your thoughts. I found this article about Barack Obama quite revealing. I'm very glad Covert Action magazine published. Your thoughts?
Well, Jim, Obama's always has been essentially Traitor 44. You know, we haven't had a an honest president for a long time. We've just had selected presidents. And, well, nothing really surprises me today. If they can, you know, politically assassinate Trump, and use all the tools that the government has, all the political tricks, foreign nationals and everything else, if they can do that to Trump for 4 years and then have the political system attempt to impeach him, not once, but twice in his last year, they can do any damn thing.
And he's still remaining politically viable. Trump would still clobber any Democrat in a future election. There's no doubt about it. And we have, of course, DeSantis in Florida, who would be the odds-on winner to secure the nomination if Trump does not run. And my guess would be if Trump were to run, which I would predict he will, but there may be a reinstatement previous to that. Let us address that momentarily. I would think DeSantis would be a perfect running mate for Trump. By the way, I may have mentioned this business about the volcano in the Canary Islands. Joe Olson, who's an engineer, recalculated. He knows hydrodynamics, and it turns out that the dissipation of the tidal wave across the Atlantic would be such that you would only get a trickle here when it got to the United States, you know. Maybe a 2-foot wave, nothing that was unusual or out of sorts. So I want to add a correction to that previous report. where Joe had miscalculated how serious it could be. No threat to New York City. There's not going to be 40 feet of water in the city, whatnot, and all that. Well, Florida isn't going to be in any jeopardy. Now, we talked before, I believe, about this letter from 120 retired admirals and generals who are saying not only was Biden elected illegitimately, but also that Biden is incompetent and it's clear he's unqualified to serve as president. So we got a situation here where they are, in addition, declaring that the Iran deal is a bad deal. They don't like the Iran deal. They're threatening that the Iran is a terrorist state. Iran can't get nuclear weapons, ignoring the fact that our own intel agencies all the way back in 2007 had concluded that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons, which they reaffirmed in 2011, where even the Mossad came on board in 2012, that Iran is not pursuing nuclear weapons. Now, my opinion is Iran needs to have nukes in order to usher in an era of stability in the Middle East, because right now we know Israel has an undeclared arsenal of nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons. Under those circumstances, because they're undeclared, we should not be able to provide any foreign aid to Israel under the Symington Amendment of the past. This is a very serious situation here, and where I'm seeing some question marks in the...
Oh, yeah. I have a question when you get done with your point, Jim.
Yeah. So it looks like the generals are willing to move to reinstate Trump as president if he would agree to attack Iran, which would be catastrophic. I believe one of the reasons he was taken out was because he was unwilling to do that. This would be a very, very precarious situation. Go ahead, Mitchell.
We're talking about stability in the Middle East in a broader fashion. Do you believe in the reports that Saudi Arabia has already purchased weapons grade plutonium from or warheads directly from Pakistan?
It wouldn't surprise me, Mitchell. I mean, the Saudis have a lot of money. Now, the concern I have is whether, has Iran obtained nukes? If Iran has nukes, they ought to let it be known, because that would put an end to all this nonsense, and we'd be in an era of, like the Cold War between the U.S. and the USSR, mutually assured destruction, MAD, which, because each nation knew it could obliterate the other. Go ahead.
Oh, my God. God bless you, sir. Sane people... I would agree. MAD is a good theory, but you're talking about people that blow themselves up for their God on a fairly regular basis.
Well, you're not these are not Iranians. Iranians aren't doing that, Mitchell.
No, the Wahhabists will in a minute. Are you aware that
that's a Saudi extremist sect, yeah, as I understand it? Yeah.
Are you aware that Saudi Arabia is in the process of building or contracted to build approximately 20 nuclear power plants, and that their first nuclear power plant, it was done last year. I don't know if it's been fueled and prepped yet, but I didn't know if you were aware of that.
I don't think I am aware of that, but that's very interesting. What I wanted to add before fielding your question is the following: if Trump were to come back to office and to seek to attack Iran obviously couldn't attack the United States. So I would hope that Vladimir Putin has provided them with his S-400s and S-500s, which are the best anti-missile defense missiles in the world, which would shoot most of them down. But the fact is, since this is instigated by Israel, I would think the appropriate response from Iran would be to threaten, I mean, sincerely threaten to annihilate Israel if the United States were to attack Iran at the instigation of Israel. Ultimately, since the Rothschilds own Israel and they take great pride in it, that might be sufficient to bring an end to the madness. Because I don't think the Rothschilds would be happy with the idea of Israel undergoing obliteration. And I do believe Iran would be capable of annihilating Israel. Your thoughts about that line of argument?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's kind of my belief that what I'm seeing is that, you know, this was all arranged by Kushner, these nuclear power plant deals, that because they know and they can't stop Iran from essentially getting the bomb. I think what they're going to try to do is to advance another competing Islamic power with nuclear weapons as kind of, you know, as you suggested, the mad syndrome of defense. It's just my major concern is we're not talking about, you know, rational thinking people.
Yeah. Well, I know. I mean, a lot of this all goes back to ancient history where the Persians defeated the, you know, the Jews in some event, you know, and 500 BC or what have you, or I mean, AD. I mean, it's just outrageous how ancient are some of these animosities, and we have to appreciate that the Talmudic Jews really do believe in Jewish supremacy, that all the other races are inferior to the Jews and only exist to serve the Jews, that the Jews are as superior to the other races as humankind in general is superior to the animals, the other animals in the fields. I mean, this is an attitude or belief that's been exemplified by multiple prime ministers of Israel. I mean, Menachem Begin is one especially egregious examples, but I believe similar views are held by Ariel Sharon, by Bibi Netanyahu. I mean, it's very, very bad. Way back when, it wasn't until 2008 that I began to sort out the difference between Judaism and Zionism and these extremely virulent versions of Zionism and the Torah Jews versus the Talmudic. And I've been absolutely stunned by the extent to which it goes back so far and the intensity of these feelings and their extraordinarily racist character. This is a Jewish racial superiority view that apparently is very predominant among those who are the Talmudic Jews as opposed to the Talmud Jews. In other words, we're talking about views that are derivative of the Babylonian Talmud. There's a piece that was published by Preston James and Michael Harris about the hidden history of the incredible evil Khazarian mafia. Everyone, I recommend, they need to watch this. I've been told this has been read 50 million times. The hidden history of the incredibly evil Khazarian mafia. I intend to publish it on my blog shortly. It was originally published on the 11th of March, 2015. Remember, demographically, in terms of DNA studies, the occupants of Israel today are not descendants of the tribe of Judah. They are descendants of Khazarians in parts of what now part of Ukraine. They are not ethnically Semites, which makes this very, very odd because it turns out that Israel, since the Palestinians actually are Semites, are the greatest practitioners of anti-Semitism in the world today. I mean, talk about irony of ironies, Mitchell.
Yes, absolutely, Jim. I want to add this. Bruce from Texas just called back in. But, you know, what I'd like to point out is, here we are 160 years basically from the Civil War. And we, you know, as a society, as if we have tackled it not in a reactionary, but we've been more proactive about our society. And we keep hearing the screaming and hollering in our society about racism and the Civil War. I mean, we're talking about groups that have beefs that go back 3,000 years. Is it going to be 3,000 years from now and they'll still be saying those white men were slaveholders, those Republicans in the North? No, you know, by the time the story gets out there.
Listen, I couldn't agree with you more, Mitchell. I mean, it's this is a whole idea to turn what is basically a race neutral society. And I believe the United States is by and large race neutral. I mean, there's so many ways to measure it. So many of our most popular celebrities, athletes are all black. No one thinks twice about it. We elected a black man president, not once, but twice. Look at advertising today. I'm astonished that given the proportion of the population that's black, which are, I don't know, maybe 15%, I'm guesstimating, I'll bet half of the commercials on television feature a black individual. And a lot of them feature, you know, racially mixed marriages, a black man with a white woman, for example. I've been fairly astonished by the proportion of advertising on television that takes this tack. And I suspect it's because the Rothschild once again want to promote interracial marriage. I mean, this goes along with the whole effort here to, you know, mix the races in Europe with the Kalergi plan, and now to mix them in America, bringing Africans into Europe and bringing South Americans and Caribbeans in over our southern border. Yeah, Bruce, you're back. Go ahead. Join the conversation. Go ahead.
Yeah, you can go back 20, 30 years ago, and there was hardly any racial tension at all. In fact, I can't even, except for the occasional, like, O.J. Simpson trial and, you know, Rodney King issue, you know. Other than that, this has all been ginned up, you know, on purpose with definitely an agenda in mind, in concert through the media and the government, you know, just like you say. Hey, you mentioned Libya earlier. Jim, I first became acquainted with your work through Veterans Today, and I recall you did leave. Also, I think Preston James left at about the same time there during the Jane Held exercise controversy.
Say that again, Bruce.
I first became familiar with your work over there at Veterans Today.
Yeah.
And I'm going to drop this on you and just see what you think about it. I remember you left along with several others, prominent writers, contributors there. Okay. And well, when Libya happened under Barack Obama, you had an interview shortly thereafter with James and Joanne Moriarty, who were all services contractors.
Yeah. Jimmy and Joanne.
Very good interview. And they also appeared on the Robert Ravolt show, and they ran down pretty much the same story they gave you, except James also, Moriarty, he referenced an al-Nusra handler, and his name was Dr. Franklin Lamb. He called him a complete scumbag. And I don't know if you remember, but Franklin Lamb was also a contributor to Veterans Today.
Was he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah. And Gordon Duff was totally on board with disposing of Gaddafi. So, yeah, you had some spooks there up underneath the covers when you were in Veterans Today. Just thought I'd let you know. Probably not surprising, you know.
Mitchell, more thoughts of yours?
Oh, gosh. We got about 3 minutes left. Let me just say this in closing. It's an unusual dream. I hope we wake up.
Unusual dream. You mean what we're going through is the nightmare
we're living through? You don't think it's surreal?
Oh, yeah.
The extent that society has been led through this, through the gates of misinformation and disinformation, and that, you know, everything they believe is essentially false. And to do this, they had to ignore years of their lives, of their professional experiences. It's like the architects and engineers in 9/11. They know the engineering of that those buildings. They know they couldn't have collapsed the way they did. It's not a question of if, it's just a question of how was it done. So we have been caught in our own deep cognitive bias. And a lot of that is because of the indoctrination education and the propaganda press that repeats the lines and lies of the deep state until it's embedded in our subconscious. That's the sad truth of today's public.
Yeah. So repeat that, Mitchell, in the minute we have left. Repeat that.
Okay. Listen, our government, our media, and our systems have brainwashed the American people at the subconscious level. This starts when we have our indoctrination education, and we learn to accept these authority figures and blindly believe the road that they lead us down. It is just a natural human phenomena, and it's basic psychology. You can't beat it. You brainwash the subconscious. If the conscious mind is not aware, it will follow.
Yeah, and the use of techniques are so powerful, and they're so massive, and
yes.
Television is the greatest brainwashing mechanism ever designed by the hand of man. And, you know, most Americans just don't know better. They take it, if they hear from two or three different sources, they assume it must be true. Yeah. When they're all just working off of the same script, propaganda, reminiscent of William Casey's observation that our disinformation campaign will be complete, a success, when everything the American people believe is false. And I know a woman who was present there when she made that statement to the assembled staff when he became the director of the CIA. Appointed by Ronald Reagan after winning his victory over Jimmy Carter, in part by negotiating with the Iranians to not release the Americans they were holding from the embassy until after the inauguration, because it would have led to a sweep of support for Jimmy Carter. Very clever. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you, Mitchell. Thanks, everyone out there. Have a great weekend. Spend time with your loved ones. We do not know how much time we have left.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
Thank you. This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict.